I just want to jump in really quickly to ask a very important favour. We know that most of you who listen to No Bullshit Leadership haven't yet hit the subscribe or follow button on your favourite podcast player. This is how the podcast grows. And even though we've already got a pretty decent global following, we're only scratching the surface of what's possible. We started this podcast over 5 years ago with the lofty ambition of improving the quality of leaders globally. So if you've got any benefit at all from listening to the podcast, I'd ask you to just take a moment, literally a moment, to hit the subscribe or follow button on your favourite player. The world needs more no bullshit leaders, and you can help us to make that happen. Back to the episode. Are you selling a little or a lot? Either way, Shopify helps you do your thing. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. It helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. In fact, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. And now you can sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. Most of the business owners who listen to No Bullshit Leadership want to go large. What's so cool about Shopify is that no matter how big you want to grow, it gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/leadership, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/leadership now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/leadership.
Welcome to the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast. In a world where knowledge has become a commodity, this podcast is designed to give you something more. Access to the experience of a successful CEO who has already walked the path. So join your host, Martin Moore, who will unlock and bring to life your own leadership experiences and accelerate your journey to leadership excellence.
Hey there, and welcome to episode 291 of the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast. This week's episode, Real Leaders Keep Their People Safe. Physically, mentally and psychologically. When I began my corporate executive career, way back at the start of this century, the only concern leaders had for safety was to ensure that people working in dangerous environments didn't get seriously injured or killed. There were a lot of businesses that didn't even need to think about the word safety, because they were predominantly white-collar, office-bound enterprises. For most of my leadership career, I worked in industrial businesses, where big machines moved with velocity, where people worked at great heights and in tiny confined spaces, and where heat, energy, and dangerous gases could combust with explosive force. The world's moved on quite a bit since then, though. These days, what it means to keep people safe and how far your leadership duty of care extends has evolved dramatically. I found that my grounding in the principles of physical safety leadership have been invaluable in meeting these challenges as well. These days, when we talk about safety, it's normally couched as SHE, safety, health, and the environment. And it covers everything from personal well-being, physical and mental health, and psychological safety, all the way through to ensuring your company leaves the smallest possible footprint on the world you operate in. Today, I'm going to take a fly across the top of the safety domain and talk about the role that you play as a leader in keeping your people safe, physically, mentally, and psychologically. So I'm going to start with a quick look at the very complex area of mental health. I'm then going to cover the more subtle field of psychological safety, and I'll finish by giving you 8 rules of thumb that are going to help you to give your people the best chance of going home at the end of the day, even better than they arrived at the start of it. So, let's get into it. Things have really changed in the way we perceive and manage mental health issues in the workplace. As recently as 10 years ago, the topic of mental health was absolutely taboo. You couldn't even talk about it in the context of work. And any leader who had the temerity to inquire about the mental health of one of her people would have been considered out of line. It would have been seen as inappropriately crossing the boundary from work into someone's personal life. And in all likelihood, you would have been told to mind your own business. It sounds ridiculous to say that now, doesn't it? Given the seismic shift we've experienced in the field of mental health in such a short space of time. These days, mental health issues in the workplace are rife. People are quite happy to express their feelings of anxiety and stress and openly discuss their inability to cope with life's many pressures. The boundaries between our work and personal lives have shifted, and leaders need to deal with the fallout. I think that overall, this is an incredibly good thing. And what constitutes great leadership hasn't really changed. Even 20 years ago, the best leaders were those who were connected to their people, empathetic to their personal struggles, and unafraid to demonstrate their caring. So that leader is going to be fine in the new world of work. But there are a few things today that make this really tricky for most leaders. For a start, very few have even the most rudimentary training in the disciplines of psychology or mental health. And it's difficult to know how to respond to any mental health issue that's brought into the open because it's almost impossible to use the leader's go-to toolkit, understanding and evaluating the risk. So leaders generally take an individual's word for whatever they choose to express as being their reality. They just accept it on face value, and then from that point forward, they handle the individual with kid gloves. That would be an HR issue, right? Well, avoidance seems to be the winning strategy. I want to make one really important point about this. As a leader, your duty of care extends to all your people, not just the ones who have explicitly declared a mental health issue. Not having the strength to deal proactively with someone on your team who's struggling with mental health issues is, in my mind, poor leadership. Why? Because the impacts, the fallout, and the risk to every other team member can't be ignored. This is wickedly complex, there's no doubt about it. But if you're in a leadership role, your duty of care extends to ensuring that your people are supported and the impact of the work environment on their mental health is minimised. You don't get a free kick, and you can't just fob it off onto HR. I released a critical podcast episode some time ago, which deals specifically with the practical application of leadership techniques in situations where one of your people is suffering from deeper issues. It was episode 185, The Mental Health Minefield. And I genuinely believe every leader needs to listen to this. We'll leave a link in the show notes. Strength, empathy, and a willingness to confront hard issues are prerequisites that, in the face of mental health issues, will keep your people, all of your people, safe. The term psychological safety was first coined by Amy Edmondson at Harvard Business School. She defines it as the shared belief held by members of a team that it's okay to take risks, to express their ideas and concerns, to speak up with questions, and to admit mistakes, all without fear of negative consequences. This is a group concept, and it's a key factor in team culture. There's a range of benefits to a culture where people feel psychologically safe, as you might expect. For a start, individuals are more motivated because they can see their contribution makes a difference. Decision makers are able to make more astute decisions because they have higher quality inputs. Continuous improvement occurs more readily through individuals learning from their mistakes and sharing it with the team. But low psychological safety creates worse outcomes at both the individual and team level. I think it's important to understand what a team culture is like when psychological safety is absent. One of the tactics employed by the most radical labour union agitators whom I worked with was to reduce psychological safety for the workers. I'm sure they wouldn't necessarily concede that this is what they were doing, but they would intentionally try to instill fear into the workforce by perpetrating the myth that management is out to get you. That would tap into people's fear response so that they'd seek the support and protection of the union. Now, in my mind, this is a pretty dodgy recruiting technique because it preys on people's worst fears. And that might be an extreme example, but remember, there are plenty of bad leaders out there who get exactly the same outcome for their own teams because they don't create psychological safety. In the absence of psychological safety, people are afraid to speak up for fear of having a target painted on their back. They're afraid to make or admit mistakes because they feel as though the weight of punishment will be disproportionate and they'll be scapegoated. And they don't want to share information because it's every person for themselves. And apart from anything else, they just burn a huge amount of energy and effort on all the wrong things, like trying to make sure they don't fall foul of their boss, who they don't feel safe with. As is the case with mental health, psychological safety is a pretty complex topic because there are so many factors in organisation and team culture that contribute to it. So you could be forgiven for taking the easy way out and just leaving your people to their own devices, letting them decide what they need to feel psychologically safe. This misses the point, and it can be incredibly counterproductive. When we talk about psychological safety, it's easy to nod in agreement and to not question it, because it sounds like it should be true. Like all conventional wisdom, it's easy to misinterpret or oversimplify the principle. So the weak leader thinks to himself, I won't criticise my team, and I won't hold individuals to account because I want them to feel psychologically safe. They need to know that it's okay to fail no matter what. Well, let's just back up the truck for a minute. Let's think about what psychological safety isn't. And Amy Edmondson herself would be at pains to explain these misconceptions. Psychological safety doesn't imply that you have to be nice to everyone. That's always going to feel completely disingenuous. I've seen teams where a leader sets out to kill her people with kindness and it completely backfires. Individuals feel insecure and frightened because they know that there's a huge gap between the reality and the saccharine sweet messaging that they get from their leader. And they're waiting for the other shoe to drop because they know a contrived culture that pays lip service to performance simply can't last. Another misconception, a psychological safety doesn't imply that everyone feels comfortable all the time. In a safe environment, there are lots of robust conversations. Why? Because people feel secure in engaging in them. There's a tension in decision making because everyone wants to achieve the best outcome, even if it means they don't necessarily get their own way. And sometimes support and comfort don't travel hand in hand. Often, the very best thing you can do to help someone is to be honest with them in a way that preserves their dignity and their self-esteem. But even though that might be the best thing for them, it's rarely comfortable. The other misconception is that psychological safety doesn't imply that people aren't held accountable for their choices. Unconditional support should be reserved for our families and close friends. As a leader, your support should be conditional upon a few things, like, did the individual follow your guidance? Did they act with the right intent? Did they observe the company's values? Did they behave morally and ethically? Well, if so, happy days. But if not, they shouldn't be able to hide behind the veil of psychological safety and expect to face no repercussions for decisions they make of their own free will. Individual accountability still has primacy, even in the safest of safe places. Now, just before I give you my 8 rules of thumb for leading safety, I do want to talk briefly about physical safety. This is one of the most difficult areas of leadership because it is so absolutely unforgiving. If you make a mistake with a customer or a supplier, or if you make a bad commercial call, you know, it's no big deal. It'll cost you some money. But a mistake in the safety arena can cost people their lives. Now, I was incredibly fortunate during my corporate career to be able to say that no one was seriously injured or killed on my watch. But if it weren't for a decent measure of luck, there are a couple of occasions where that wouldn't have been the case. I'm not going to go into any of the gory details here, but what I will say is that if something happens to one of your people, it never leaves you. There were a few times in my career where a deal didn't pan out the way we thought, and we lost some cash. And years later, look, I couldn't even tell you to the nearest $10 million how much that was. But the leaders I know who've had people in their teams killed or seriously injured can remember every minute detail as if it were yesterday. If you look at my LinkedIn profile or my website, martingmoore.com, you'll see the headline from my time at CS Energy. During my tenure, we increased EBITDA earnings from $17 million to $441 million. But I'm equally proud of the improvements we made in safety. Over that same time period, the safety statistics improved massively. Our lost time injury rate reduced from 4.1 to 0.6. Now, to translate, this effectively means that for a certain number of hours worked across the company, in this case, 2 million hours, instead of seriously injuring 8 people, as we did in 2014, we only injured 1 person in 2018. That is 7 people who avoided serious injury because we made the environment safer for them to work in. Now, of course, a lot of work goes into this from a lot of people, but the standard and expectation is set right at the top. And it means you have to sometimes make really difficult decisions, like removing leaders who aren't strong enough to do what it takes to keep their people safe. And I did that more than once. I can tell you without fear of contradiction that I put at least as much effort and commitment into making CS Energy a safer place to work as I did in the turnaround of its commercial and financial performance. All right, let me finish with a quick flyover my 8 rules of thumb for keeping your people safe, physically, mentally, and psychologically. The first is, don't tolerate reluctant leaders. Don't forget every leader has a duty of care. And if you've got leaders in place who aren't prepared to step up and keep their people safe by holding a standard, then they shouldn't be there. You can't afford to put someone else at risk because you have a leader who's not willing to do what they're supposed to do and not exercise their duty of care. So that's where you start. The second rule of thumb is, be really clear about what you want. If people are confused or unclear about what you're trying to achieve or what you expect from them, then they can't be blamed for not doing what you think they should. So the communication aspect is all important. When you're communicating well to people about what the expectation is around their safety, they're more likely to act safely. Third rule of thumb is, be empathetic. But of course, don't be sympathetic. Now, empathy is super important. You need to be able to connect with your people so that you can put yourself in their shoes and see the world through their eyes. That's what empathy is. And the more empathetic you are, the better you're going to understand each individual who works for you. But empathy is not sympathy. Sympathy is when you start to feel sorry for people and make concessions for them. So, for example, someone behaving unsafely, you might say, "Oh, well, I know they're going through a divorce, so I'll overlook that." No, that's how people get hurt. Number 4, be clear on the relationship between processes and behaviours. Now, this relates specifically to physical safety, but it's quite an important one. I've worked in organisations where most of the rank and file workers say, processes are what keeps it safe. We will follow the processes, and if the processes are wrong and we get hurt, then it's management's fault because the processes should have been better. That's a really dangerous way to look at things. The role of processes in any system is that they are necessary, but not sufficient. There's no such thing as a perfect process or a perfect contract or a perfect procedure. And so you've got to use your noggin as well. You've got to think in terms of risk management all the time. So as well as the process, which should be good enough to get you through, you've got to apply your judgment and adjust for conditions and behave the right way around those processes. If you rely on the process alone, it's not going to end well. So as a leader, being really clear about the fact that process is necessary but not sufficient, and every individual needs to step up and think about the risks that they're managing at any point in time. Rule of thumb number 5, create a no-blame, no-excuses culture. This is really the best way of describing the type of culture you want your team to have. You want people to be creative, to try things, to show some initiative, to go above and beyond. And when they trip over or make a mistake, as they invariably will, you want that to be a learning experience, not an opportunity to cast blame. So you want people to stand up and say, "I've got this, this is mine, I'm going to get on with it," because they know that they're safe. If something goes wrong, it's learning, it's not blaming. Rule of thumb number 6, don't overfunction for your people. It's so easy these days when we see someone who's a little bit weaker in the team to cuddle up to them and to help them and to overfunction for them, to say, it's okay, I'll look after it. You don't have to do your job, I'll make sure your job gets done because I'm being kind to you. And kindness is an incredibly important factor in leadership. But if you overfunction for someone, you're not doing them any favors. You're stifling their growth. You're allowing them to become weak. And if they don't have a job with you, then the next boss may not be so forgiving. Rule of thumb number 7, give your people autonomy and empowerment, but do so inside clear guardrails. You want your people to feel as though they have some control. This is really about how they get things done. They'll be really reluctant to go out on a limb if they feel as though they're not controlling the outcome. And typical things that stop people from feeling as though they have control is you jumping it over the top and overruling their decisions, or moving the goalposts frequently in terms of what you expect, or maybe even just not resourcing them sufficiently. There are so many ways that you can steal your people's autonomy and empowerment. So make sure they've got clear guidelines for where they can go, and then let them get at it. Focus on the what, not the how. Let them decide that. Finally, number 8. This is critical. Hold every individual accountable for their choices. They have to meet the minimum acceptable standard. Now, one of the most important things about making sure you keep people safe is that there is a standard that you will not contravene. It sets the floor for people's behavior and performance. You can't let people dip below the minimum acceptable standard or all sorts of chaos breaks loose. The things that you're trying to uphold to make sure that people are being safe aren't there. It's illusory. And just remember, people don't watch your lips. They watch your feet. It doesn't matter what you say about the standard you're setting. It's the standard you enforce that matters. So make sure every individual has to be accountable for the choices they make. All right. Every leader should decide how deliberate and conscious they're going to be about keeping their people safe. But many choose to ignore this question altogether. And some don't even know that it's a question they should be asking. It's not my problem. I can't really influence it because there are too many things that are outside of my control. But with all the pressures a leader faces, it's no wonder that this doesn't factor highly on the daily to-do list. But it's really not until you're blindsided by an unexpected event that you're forced to examine the nature of the environment you're providing for your people. Safety is the stalking horse for anything else you want to change for the better in your team. It's one of the true virtues of leadership that shouldn't be tarnished by petty politics or point scoring. Improving safety should be an area where everyone from the chairman of the board down to the frontline workers is aligned on. And if you show your people that you're prepared to invest in their welfare, it helps to build trust. Once you have trust, there's not much you can't do. All right, so that brings us to the end of episode 291. Thanks so much for joining us. And remember, at Your CEO Mentor, our purpose is to improve the quality of leaders globally. So please make sure you subscribe to the No Bullshit Leadership Podcast on your favorite player. I look forward to next week's episode where I welcome M back to the microphone for another listener Q&A. Until then, I know you'll take every opportunity you can to be a no bullshit leader.